You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5. And Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395 6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Israeli occupation forces have opened fire on Palestinians approaching the newest aid distribution point opened by the controversial U.S.-backed Gaza Humanitarian Foundation in central Gaza, killing one Palestinian and injuring several others. Similar attacks on Tuesday and Wednesday also left 10 Palestinians dead. The U.S. and Israel are under fire for their Gaza aid plan run by private firms with military ties. Critics say the initiative exploits the humanitarian crisis to impose data control and identify resistance figures under the cover of aid. And the GHF is actually being used to weaponize aid in Gaza. UN agencies and human rights groups warn the plan violates humanitarian principles and say they already have the means to distribute much-needed aid and alleviate the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza. We'll be discussing that and more on this edition of Spotlight. Here are our guests. Political science at Brzezd University, Saad Nim, joining us from Ramallah. And with us from Beirut, from the international coordinator of the Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, Charlotte Cates.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, welcome to the program, to both of our guests. Let's start off with Mr. Saad Nimr. Mr. Nimr, if you're with us, what do you make of this highly questionable aid distribution mechanism instigated by the U.S. and the Israelis?
From the very beginning, it was clear that this plan by the Israeli and the American companies, as they call it, which is security companies, as a matter of fact, the aim was to gather all the people in spots in Gaza, especially towards the south, in order to later on to make sure who's going to get food and aid and who's not going to get anything at all. And then after that, when they gather all these people in this corner or this area, which is near to Rafah, that was part of the scheme or of the plan for the ethnic cleansing. It was quite clear, and the Palestinians do understand that from the very beginning, and they warn everyone about that. But however, the failure in the first few days, it was quite clear because there was not enough food and people were marching in and that caused that these two companies officers, they have to run away. And in that day, they killed many Palestinians. And yesterday and today, also we have the same problem. Yesterday, they ran away again, and they left everything on the tables for the people to take them, which was not enough. And very few boxes of food, which most of the people didn't get anything at all. So this scheme is a total failure. And today they shot at a Palestinian and killed a Palestinian. So all the time we have big problems because it's not their job to do that. And they can't do it. And the whole thing is, you know, for the idea to gather the Palestinians in Rafah in order to kick them out later on. The only thing is that international organization, which used to make the distribution, and especially when we are talking about, you know, the UNRWA, for instance, they have more than 16,000 employees in Gaza, and they have 400 centers for distribution. This is the right thing to do if they aim to end this problem of you know, not getting the humanitarian aid to Gaza. But with this scheme and with this company and with this, you know, guarded by the Israeli soldiers, definitely it is not a kind of a solution to the problem at all.
Ms. Charlotte Cates, international aid agencies have already warned that Israeli and U.S. plans to control aid distribution in Gaza will actually add to the suffering in the devastated Palestinian territory. Analysts, activists, aid agencies have described it as a mockery of humanitarian law. Why is an alternative needed to the already established methods of aid delivery through UN-affiliated organizations? And why isn't aid being allowed into Gaza in the first place?
No alternative is needed to UN aid distribution. In fact, there was not a need for aid in Gaza in the first place, at least not to this extent, except for the fact of the ongoing Zionist genocide, which is backed, armed, and funded by the United States. So first of all, you have the parties that are carrying out a genocide against the people who are living under siege, who are struggling to survive, Palestinians in Gaza, and then them saying that they're going to be in charge of aid distribution, and that in order to receive aid, they're going to be checking IDs, they're going to be scanning people's faces. There's no intention here of providing people with food. In fact, when you looked at the food that was being provided, it was really not food that was meant for the long term, but to have people consistently forced to come back to these points so that they can be rounded up and caged, and so that the U.S. and the Zionist regime can use this as a way of engaging in surveillance. The United Nations is perfectly capable. It has been blocked by the Zionist regime from doing so. U.N. workers and Palestinian aid workers, first and foremost, Palestinian aid workers, Palestinian civil defense workers, Palestinian security forces and police defending food aid and other kinds of aid from gangs. All of these have been repeatedly, specifically bombed and targeted for assassination by the Zionist regime, by its warplanes, by its drones, and by its bombs. And so there's absolutely no need for anything other than to end the genocide and allow the Palestinian people to manage the aid that they receive with the support of the United Nations and international institutions, who have all made clear that they will not participate in this system, which is not meant as a form of aid at all. It is simply meant as another mechanism of starvation.
All right, let's go back to Mr. Saad Nimr. Head of UNRWA has warned that the aid delivery and distribution model introduced by the Israeli regime, and of course, the U.S. not only wastes much-needed resources, but it's also a distraction from the Israeli atrocities that they are carrying out in the territory. The U.N. has also warned that this quote-unquote authorization mechanism and restrictions on humanitarian aid suppliers would actually introduce greater control over aid delivery by the regime forces. Unpack these comments for us, if you may.
Oh, yes, that's absolutely right. You know, what the Israelis now are trying to say, that here we are now getting the aid into Gaza, and people are, now benefiting from the food. Today there was an announcement by this companies, American companies, saying that we have already distributed 1 million boxes of aid, which is a big lie, watching the news all this last week on a daily basis, it is not true at all. So I think that the aim is not to distribute food or to give the Palestinian aid, but rather to gather them, as we mentioned, and also, as your guest just mentioned, they have to produce their ID and they will be identified, and they will then consider who will take food or not. This is quite obvious. What the UNRWA is saying, that this is just to play a game against the whole world, to say that we are distributing aid, but in reality it is not, and the only capable people doing that are these organizations who used to do it in the last 2 years at least during the war. So because of that, we believe that not only it is a big failure, but it is a scam against the Palestinian people. It's making the situation even worse, because the Israelis are now trying to get or filter, if you like, the Palestinian people who is getting in to this area, and who is getting food and who is not getting food. And that is also a kind, according to what? According to what kind of record? And the scanning and all these kind of things, it's quite clear. We are talking here is a continuation of another method of the genocide, and also to help in the genocidal war against the Palestinian in all aspects, whether it is the military part or the food and aid part, which is also part of the genocide war against the Palestinians. So now this is to facilitate their doing, and to make specific areas and specific people who could get aid from these companies and from the Israelis and these companies, and not to have aid for everyone. And when we are talking about everyone, we are talking about 2.4 million Palestinians who are suffering from north to the south. The north is not getting anything. In the center, they are not getting anything. And people have to walk. And in some areas, they have to walk something like 30 kilometers on foot, because they don't have money to ride, and there's no rides anyway. And it's really, a killing issue. And what about those ill? What about the ill persons who can't even walk? And all of them, they have to go. It's, I think, the whole thing is part of the genocidal war.
Right. Miss Charlotte Cates, the GHF has been accused of assisting the Israeli regime in fulfilling its military objectives and excluding the most vulnerable Palestinians from receiving aid. And straight out of the blocks, the UN and many aid organizations have refused to cooperate with the group, which they say contradicts humanitarian principles and appears to weaponize aid. Do you agree with that notion?
Well, I mean, absolutely. The so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation was apparently, according to reporting today, receiving $100 million from the Mossad, according to many reports. It's under investigation in Switzerland because of the murky circumstances of its founding and its funding. Its executive director, even though this is someone who is coming from the U.S. system that's producing and funding this genocide, resigned, saying it would be impossible to carry out this task ethically. And what we've seen so far is Palestinians being arrested and detained when they are thought to have family members who may be involved with the resistance in some way, or not even necessarily involved in the resistance, but involved with or working for the public sector in Gaza, which is being targeted across the board by the Zionist regime. We're also seeing people being shot, people being killed, people being bombed from the sky. And what we've also seen is this attempt to fence people, to force them through these surveillance systems. And as we saw the very first day in Rafah, these U.S. mercenary contractors had apparently never thought that they would encounter people with will and a commitment to preserve their lives and the lives of their families, and they wound up basically deserting the entire site, which wound up being dismantled by hungry Palestinians looking for food to take to their homes. You know, there's nothing about this project, the whole name, Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, every single word in the name of this project is a lie. It's not for the benefit of Gaza. It's for the benefit of the Zionist regime. There's nothing humanitarian about it. In fact, it's a humanitarian law disaster. And it's not a foundation. It's an intelligence and military mechanism.
Sure. Professor Nimr, it's not just with the issue with food and aid. The WFP has also expressed concerns about the severe lack of safe water and fuel for cooking. Gazans have to scavenge for items to burn in order to cook meals. Schools, camps, shelters, housing, displaced families, hospitals, they continue to be attacked by the Israelis. Every aspect of this war is genocidal, is a war crime, is a crime against humanity, is ethnic cleansing. It checks all the boxes, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, that's absolutely right. It checks all the boxes of violation to the international law and to the international human law and to Geneva Convention. That's quite well. This organization who's, you know, distributing food now, only food, but as you mentioned, the need for the Palestinians in Gaza, it's in all aspects, not only food. The fuel is very important for the hospitals, for the ambulances, for the facilities which produce and clear water. Also, medical supplies. We need also, it's not only about food. It's lots of things that lacks in Gaza. For God's sake, now when we have all these bombardments, the aid workers, they can't, excavate the buildings, and they do it with their own hands because they don't have the equipments, and they don't, so we need everything in Gaza, and as you mentioned, schooling and even caravans and also tents, because people over these last 18 months going or 20 months going on and from one area to another, the displacement of the Palestinians, they have no tents anymore, and they have, even if they have some after the bombardment of the Israelis, they left with nothing. And they barely, covered them in a way or another. It won't work for neither winter or even summer. And now we've been going into the second year of the war. So the need for the Palestinians in all aspects and in everything is needed. Not only just food and water, but what, it's quite clear that the Israelis and this company, and by introducing these companies and this scheme, they are trying to say to the world, here we are giving the Palestinians the humanitarian aid, but this is not the humanitarian aid, neither in the quality nor in the quantity that is coming to Gaza to help all these people who are, traveling from one area to another, displaced from one area to another, and they need desperately health and help and need this humanitarian aid. We are talking about more than 60 children were killed till now because of hunger and because of bad nutrition, and that need to be solved. Right. And solving it not by these boxes distributed by this kind of organization.
Charlotte Cates, Israel's far-right minister Itamar Ben-Gavir has called for using full force in Gaza. Israel's far-right cabinet has openly embraced Donald Trump's proposals on Gaza to displace Palestinians permanently outside the territory. We already know that Arab states have rejected that plan. So what happens to the Gazans who want to stay, those who do not want to leave their homeland? Do the Israelis intend to starve and kill every Gazan who stays?
I mean, just to be clear, This isn't even a plan or a proposal that we should be discussing. What we are talking about here is genocide, war crimes, and ethnic cleansing. And the only plan that we should be talking about is how to hold the Zionist regime and all of its officials accountable in Palestinian and international courts for their crimes being committed against the Palestinian people. It's very clear that the Zionist regime plans to continue its campaign of bombing, assassination, assaults, ethnic cleansing, invasions, mass killing, and starvation. But it's not an inevitability that they get to do that. They're only permitted to do that so long as they are not being stopped. Every single day, the resistance is fighting back. Every single day, the resistance is working to make them stop. We are seeing the power of the Yemeni people, their armed forces, and the Ansar Allah movement in holding the Zionist regime accountable. And it's time for that example to be repeated around the world.
Professor Nimr, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says the humanitarian situation in Gaza is entering a critical phase. It called on Arab and Muslim countries to send aid convoys to Gaza in a bid to pressure Israel into lifting the siege. Let's talk about the inaction of many of these Arab governments in the face of the genocidal war on Gaza. Why have we not seen any tangible action from certain Arab governments in the face of this massacre and slaughtering of their Arab brothers?
Well, this is a real shame, a shame on all these Arab countries, because we do know that they have the ability to do something. If they wanted to do something, they can do it, and they can do it really in a very quick way. But would they want it to do that? This is the question. It's not the ability to do it. It's the whether they have the thought to do it or not. And I don't think they are going to do anything about it, because they are all connected to the United States and connected to Israel somehow. And they won't do anything unless they were told to do this kind of thing. We have seen now in Europe some kind of movement, and people are really angry in Europe, and they are trying to do something. So far, it's not enough, and we know it's just, you know, so far statements, but at least they have taken some kind of gesture here and there. But in the Arab world, and Islamic world for that matter, it's unbelievable. It's really, really very big shame, you know, talking about all these Arab countries. They can, with one phone call, even to the United States, for God's sake, you know, Trump, get out of the area with more than $3 trillion. And just, you know, can say, okay, with a phone call by one of these countries to Trump to say, we are not happy with what's going on, and they should stop it. And I think they will stop it. But they don't want to do that. They are not able to do that. And they don't think about, you know, doing that. To the contrary, some of these Arab countries are really acquainted with the Zionist movement, and they are, you know, thinking that, yes, we should kick out the Palestinians, we should finish the Palestinian question even totally. So I don't think that they are going to do anything, and shame on them, unless their people start to going out in the streets, you know, to pressurize them somehow. Maybe that will, you know, bring some shame on their faces, so to do something about it. But so far, nothing is happening.
And Charlotte Cates, one last question for you. The French President Emmanuel Macron has called for an urgent ceasefire in the Gaza Strip amid Israel's relentless bombings of the besieged territory. He called on European countries to harden their collective positions against Israel if it fails to respond appropriately to the humanitarian situation there. Some European countries have recently threatened to impose sanctions and enforce an arms embargo on Israel. Other European countries continue to support the regime. Can you explain this chasm that we're seeing among European countries?
Well, just to note about Macron, his government is currently threatening to ban the largest pro-Palestinian organization in the country, and has threatened them with dissolution and has frozen the assets of one of its founders. So, you know, let's be clear about just how much Macron really wants to stop the genocide, when they could actually stop selling arms to the Zionist regime and stop providing it with diplomatic cover on any day of the week, and they absolutely refuse to do so. You know, we are, of course, we have, of course, seen progress in Spain and Ireland and elsewhere. But one of the things that we should also be clear is that one of the reasons why these governments are actually beginning to say a few words, even if that hasn't been translated into actual meaningful action, such as imposing an arms embargo, expelling the Zionist ambassadors, cutting off relations, ending the EU-Israel free trade agreement, banning Zionist soldiers from entering the country, from entering Europe, etc. One of the reasons, you know, why we're actually seeing at least some words in this regard is because the population of Europe is absolutely appalled at the images that they see every single day of the fact that millions of people are being bombed, killed, and starved because of the ongoing complicity of the European Union countries, because of the ongoing role of the United States, Canada, Australia, and the other imperialist powers.
Okay, sorry to jump in there. That's all the time we have for tonight's show. Allow me to thank my guests, Professor of Political Science at Birzeit University, Saad Nim, joining us from Ramallah, International Coordinator of the Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, Ms. Charlotte Cates, joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. And, of course, a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's edition of Spotlight. It's good night for now.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
Islam my deen.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Well, sometimes I do respect myself so much in a way that I prioritize myself over any other stuff. And this could create some problems for me and for others, relationship with others.
Yet I believe self-love is the greatest form of love in this world.
Yeah.
Assalamu alaikum and a very warm welcome. This is Iran Radio. This is Zainab and she's
Asma.
Listening to your favorite station.
Youth Station.
Prioritizing me or prioritizing you?
That's the question.
Or prioritizing someone else.
It's actually, let's figure it out at the very end of today's episode. But I think it's a good thing to prioritize myself over every other stuff.
Yes, I am with you.
But there's always exceptions.
Okay.
In the middle.
Let's say Asma's exception first.
Okay. Well, the exception is that I should prioritize myself to the point that it does not interfere with the matters that God has told me.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's the red
line.
Like,
for example, in a condition of a doctor who's got a lot of responsibility in a society, imagine when war comes in, that doctor, if he wants to prioritize himself over every other stuff, what would happen? He would leave.
Yeah.
Pretty much easy. Like, he would have a perfect life. He would choose himself and his family and his peace and his comfort zone. He would go to another part of the world where everything is so perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least it seems like perfect. Anyway, but then what happens in his own country is that people are going to suffer so much and there would be running from some doctors to help them. Like, this is a very teeny tiny example just to
prioritize. Yeah.
Yeah. Just to make it tangible.
Right, it is. It's something like, I agree with you. So sometimes, like, you know, when we prioritize our choices over the people of our country, over other things, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wanted us to be in that situation, but we run away, I think we ourselves are in loss, actually.
Yeah, well, I sometimes hear some words and notions from
like what?
My friends and people around me, sometimes the relatives, the children of the relatives, because they are the young generation. Younger, not that I'm old, but the younger generation. When I hear these stuff from them, I just fear how selfish they could be. Because, you know, the concept of prioritizing yourself to other things and other people is directly linked with the idea of self-love to some point, but yeah, more than that, to selfishness.
Yeah. You know, I'm a kind of person who likes discipline so much, and I'm very strict about it. And the other day I heard this message from my son that he had been making the planes and missiles in the glass of the paper, and he's been throwing that from one bench to another. And we heard it from like him as well as another. I was like shocked. And when I confronted him and asked him, and he was like, it's my choice that matters.
Oh, my God. Your choice is a very dangerous choice.
Not the rules and regulations of other place. If I have got to be obedient, it's only you, my parents, why I have to go to be obedient to someone else. So, like, see?
If everybody thinks like you, then the world is going to be entirely going upside down.
It's really sometimes hard to deal with this particular generation.
Really?
Who prioritize themselves, their choices.
Over every other thing. Well, we usually consider this generation as the people who are so much of a rebellious kind of creatures, and they are just rebels, and they care for themselves. But as, you know, the people who...
Guys, I think there's a positive news. Yeah, go ahead. That's fine.
Well, I think there are many martyrs. Since we're living in a place in this world in which many wars are happening around us, we could see that many of the soldiers, many of the people who voluntarily go to defend their countries, to actually fight back with the one who's actually coming to grasp their own country, are considered as a part of this generation that would call them selfish. So another concept that is directly linked with the concept of prioritizing myself as the opposite side of it is being selfless.
Yeah.
And even in this generation, we could see some people who are really selfless when the God is concerned.
Yeah.
When generosity is concerned.
Talking of the martyrs, talking of the priorities, talking of others' priorities, you reminded me of something. When you remind me of a very young martyr who would actually come out of school, and after coming out of school, he would directly get into the mosque. And then after, you know, when he would come out of the mosque, his friend would daily confront him and ask him, hey, what is it like? You know, we come out of the school, we're tired, we could go home, but you just go to mosque. So he says, I have two reasons. One reason is that I want to offer namaz in its first place, namaz awal waqt, what we say. And other reason is that the moment our school is off, girls' school is also off. So I want to avoid having any kind of, you know...
Interaction.
Yeah, so like I just prefer to go into mosque. So here, this martyr is prioritizing Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala prioritized him, giving him the status of
martyr. Exactly. Yeah, so I guess now the question is totally answered. I can prioritize myself over everything except God.
Except God.
God must be prioritized over every other things and his matters, of course. Whatever that is his concern, whatever that he has asked me, must be the stuff that I prioritize over every other thing. Like, that's why we say, even in today's generation, whom we call them that very, you know, self-centered, caring for themselves, caring for their benefits or whatever, which is not a bad thing in itself.
Yeah.
Even them, when it comes to God, they pick him. And we have seen it. We have seen it in the battlefields. We have seen it even in the other parts and other stuff that happens in society. We see that there are many youngsters who come to help the society just because it's the matter of God and it's the matter of other inhabitants of their own country and of their own city.
Thank you.
You're on a boat.
Okay.
There are 10 other people with you.
Okay.
And the boat is sinking. Would you, if you know swimming, would you forget about the future of the other 10 people and you just save yourself? Just because you know swimming.
I don't think
so. And they don't.
I don't think so.
No. All of us. I mean, there's no one in this world who could say, yes, I would go.
Save for myself.
Yeah, yeah. I say. But why when it comes to practical world?
Situation.
Why when it comes to my workplace, if they tell me there's this amount of money that we're going to give you as a reward?
Yeah.
And then would I accept it? Would I put it this way that, okay, if it's not me, I'd be very happy if they give it to my friend because she's in need of that. Would it be this way?
Actually sounds very good, but when it comes to practical things, it's really very hard.
Yeah, it's really very hard. Like, for example, even forget about the workplace. When it comes to my relationship with my siblings, if anything extra is given to them and not to me, how would I feel? Like, I would be a little bit of heartbroken.
Injustice, unfairness.
Yeah, and then I would go and make such marches
nagging
for injustice.
Yeah.
And all of these. But just to wrap it all up, because time is flying so fast, I would put it this way that selflessness is actually a beautiful concept.
Right.
All these loyal people that we had throughout history, and even in our religion, they were all selfless. Whatever good, I remember there was a code from a great figure, and actually Iran's heritage, Dr. Ali Shariati, who was actually famous. Once I read a quote from him, which was very interesting and very, scary. He said that, "Oh God, I wish you have filled my heart with all the problems and burdens of the other people in this world and exempt them from the problems."
Oh.
Like, to say such a thing is one thing. And to practice it is another thing, totally.
It is.
It's very difficult to
but
say
again,
it this way.
But again, we have to look back to our role models. Like, you know, when Lady Zahra Salman was asked by Imam Hassan al-Assam,
exactly,
why are you making dua for the neighbors first? And she said, first neighbors, mm-hmm, and then us. So, like, she was someone who would prioritize others, even in her worship. So it's like, even in her duas. So we are from this school of thought, and we have to be so, so selfless.
I usually say that we shouldn't let the beautiful torches of kindness and humanity die down. Because in today's world, maybe I don't know. It's lifestyle. I don't know.
That's something that sounds so tangible to every human. I happened to ask someone from Australia, what is love? I would ask this question to all people from different cultures, and this person gave me a beautiful answer, and I think that's very much related to our topic. He said, for example, you and your sister, you have one chocolate, you like it very much, mm-hmm, and you have only one piece of it.
Yeah.
At the same time, your sister also likes it. And you, out of selflessness, it can't be even, you can't even make a half of it. You have to either give it whole of it or just not to give it. You have only this choice. And when you give it selflessly, that's love.
Yeah,
exactly.
That was
a very beautiful definition of love given to me by someone from Australia.
That sums it all up, I guess. Because, truly, it's actually what I wanted to say. When you are capable and you have it in your hand, whether it be a benefit, it be a reward, it be anything, a position, a promotion, whatever, you have it. You're one step away from it. But you choose to give it to another person if the actually choice is given to you, then I guess that would be called selflessness. And that's also prioritizing yourself in another way. You are actually prioritizing yourself in God's eyes.
Yes.
And that's a very much more important thing. So I guess it was a very interesting journey to talk about prioritizing myself and coming to this point of selflessness. Well, this is very interesting. And this is all.
I would add one last point is that sometimes when you prioritize others, even for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, but then you forget your own family and main, important members. then I think you got to be reconsidering things, mm-hmm. seeing what Allah, whose obedience, whose priorities I have to fix first. There should be a big balance in
exactly,
life.
Exactly, you know? Yeah.
Balance and moderation.
Thank you for mentioning that, because what we're saying in here doesn't mean that you have to always be selfless, you have to always forget about your benefits.
Especially
no.
when your main family is suffering because of that, your selflessness. Yeah. Because sometimes we are so, so selfless for the society, we forget our own family.
Exactly.
So that's something not
so recommended. So just go on a moderate direction, I guess, between
moderation
selflessness
has always been a key, yeah.
and prioritizing yourself. Well, that's an interesting thing to do, I guess. A challenge it would be. So this is all. I hope you have enjoyed it. So,
I also hope that. Thank you for listening. You were listening to Iran Radio.
Youth Station.
Yeah, she's Asma again. And I'm Zainab, bidding you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum.
Rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that, inshallah, in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Allah, Allah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Have you ever thought about life in a desert area? An arid place with suffocating heat, hostile geography, extreme temperatures, and scarce resources.
It's all about freshness, freshness of life. Maybe it's all about the beautiful, shiny, and constantly changing colors of our dreams. And the soft and pleasing breeze that flows through the branches and leaves of these trees.
We don't have it in our country, so for us it's like a new thing. It's an invention, I think. Especially here, as it's very hot in the summer or during the year, I think it works properly this way.
Fantastic piece of engineering, showing wonderful expertise from Iran.
Donc voilà, en fait, ça m'intéressait super.
Well, I was very interested to know how this air conditioning system works, because my father works for a company in Belgium that makes cooling systems, but they make mechanical devices over there, and these are natural.
You experience, you know, in the hot desert, something completely, you know, different. It was a really wonderful experience, and I was impressed by the engineering and the architecture.
City of Yaz is undoubtedly a living museum that holds in every corner a precious architectural treasure. The countless historical houses of Yaz show the importance of this ancient city, which may soon become the first Iranian city registered as a World Heritage Site by UNESCO. The inhabitants of this land tried to use everything they had to master the hard character of the desert and create magnificent works of art for future generations. One of the architectural wonders of this city is undoubtedly the wind tower, or wind catcher. In Farsi, they are called Badgir. An example of how people use their imaginations and creativity to overcome obstacles. To start our journey in the world of inventions of our ancestors, we arrive at the Persian Garden of Daulatabad to discover the jewel that it holds inside.
Daulatabad Garden in Yazd, which is more than 250 years old, is one of the most famous Persian gardens in the world. The garden has an element which makes it very significant, a great contributor to its famousness, and that is a wind catcher. The tallest wind catcher in the world. No joke, it's about 34 meters. It's a multi-directional wind catcher with 8 sides. It pretty much catches every wind, no matter where it blows from.
The building and the garden were built in 1750 as the residence of the Persian king Karim Khan Zand. The tower was rebuilt after a collapse occurred in the 60s. The tower still performs the function of ventilation and air circulation inside the building. The wind tower or Badgir is neither more nor less than natural air conditioning, without plugs and mechanical devices. They can have several vents, from 1 to 8 on each side, where the wind enters and goes down the tower to the home, where it sucks the air up from inside of the rooms. If you stop just below one of them, you feel a permanent breeze of fresh air, especially during the extremely hot days of summer. Its design and aesthetic form provide an example of architecture in harmony with traditional society and the environment. The construction of a wind catcher depends on the direction of the airflow in that specific area. If the wind tends to blow from one side, it is constructed as a unidirectional wind catcher, facing against the wind direction. Throughout the centuries and in different regions emerged several types of Badgirs, with 1, 2, 4, or even 5 towers, to direct the wind down into the buildings and structures. The reasons for having several wind towers for one structure could be technical, cultural, or just to please the eyes of visitors. The 5 wind towers in the famous Amir Chakhmak Square in Yazd are certainly among the ones that mesmerize you.
During history, water has been always a critical element in human lives. Many parts of our country, Iran, are considered arid or semi-arid areas, which makes water a precious resource in those areas. Because of that, Iranians, and specifically people of those areas, including Yazd, had to come up with some sort of technology to store this water, to keep it fresh, cold and pure, so it would be drinkable.
This is the dome of a traditional water reservoir called Abambar, which can store water at very low temperatures during the summer. Badgirs provide ventilation to prevent water from rotting.
The weather situation in Yazd can be pretty harsh during certain times of the year. That's probably why Yazdi people wanted to build tiny little paradises inside their houses. This paradise has different elements, including waterways, water fountains, ponds, lots of trees, plants, and last but not least, the wind catcher.
The wind towers have become a formal symbol and recognition of the city of Yazd. By using one of the cleanest sources of energy with zero pollution, wind catchers have made Yazd one of the most sustainable and eco-friendly cities in Iran. Today, wind catchers are everywhere in Yazd. They are decorating and cooling down places like water reservoirs, houses, Persian gardens, and caravanserais.
Yazd definitely has one of the best skylines in Iran. If you ever visit this city, I would highly recommend climbing up one of these historical buildings to have a perfect view of this adobe city, to see all the beautiful domes, minarets, and of course, wind catchers.
Some people go beyond the rooftop. They fly, and they go way up in the sky to see Yazd and its wind towers from a different angle. The Badghirs in Yazd have magnificent views from the architectural viewpoint. Shahryar Azimi for Iran.
Desde el corazón de Asia Occidental, la hora de Irán te sumerge en el mundo persa. Conocerás su cultura y posición en el mundo.
Hola, queridos oyentes, bienvenidos a una nueva emisión de La Hora de Irán. Es un placer estar con ustedes. Como siempre, agradecemos a todos los que nos siguen en cada programa y a quienes se unen por primera vez. Les recordamos que pueden participar y enviarnos sus comentarios y mensajes a través de nuestro sitio iranradio.ir. Hoy tenemos una programación especial para ti, diferente a los programas anteriores. El programa de hoy es en memoria del comandante mártir Qasem Soleimani, el comandante iraní que fue martirizado por los Estados Unidos de Norteamérica el 2 de enero de 2020. Así que no se despeguen de la radio. Vamos a empezar con una conversación sobre la personalidad del mártir Qasem Soleimani. Les invitamos a escuchar la primera parte de este programa especial.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. En el nombre de Dios, el misericordioso, el clemente. Muy buenos días, queridos hermanos y hermanas de América Latina, especialmente de Venezuela. El día de hoy tenemos un programa muy especial. Hablaremos de aquellos hombres que trascienden, aquellos hombres que dejan un legado en la historia y nunca mueren. Por ejemplo, comenzamos.